Righty-ho, what I'd like you to do is to turn to your neighbour and tell them what you're giving up for Lent and why. Turn to your neighbour, what are you giving up for Lent and why? Maybe for you, it's the opportunity of a further detox after dry January. Maybe it's a spiritual discipline to remind you of Jesus' 40 days in the wilderness. Maybe you think you've got some difficult things come up after Easter. Maybe you've got important exams and you think you just need to earn some brownie points with God. So a bit of giving up stuff in Lent will help you with that. Maybe it's a job interview coming up. Maybe you're just desperate that that girl will notice you. So you'll try giving up stuff for Lent. It might help. In a discussion I heard on the radio last week, someone said that we deserve what we desire. We deserve what we desire. So I was just thinking, well, if that's true, then Christians must be in pole position, mustn't we? Because surely we have access to God who can give us what we desire. So therefore, we can just twist his arm a bit and get him on side, give up a few chocolates, a bit of alcohol, then who knows what we might get. We saw last time just how privileged were those who had put their trust in Jesus. Because not just were they forgiven and right relationship with God, but God had given them the gift of his Spirit. And by that gift, we are enabled to call God our Father, in the same way that Jesus, our elder brother, did. And what Paul is now saying to these churches in Galatia is, why on earth are you going to throw that away? Why on earth are you going to give that up? How can you turn back to slavery again? It's a relationship with God that counts. Verse 8, formerly, when you did not know God, you were enslaved to those who by nature are not gods. But now that you have come to know God, or rather be known my God, how can you turn back again? Here Paul presents a classic before and after. Formerly, your lives were given over to idols of all shapes and sizes. But now, you've been rescued. You know Jesus has died for you. You know you've got these great gifts. What on earth do you think you're doing? How on earth can you return to slavery? How on earth can you go back to keeping the Jewish law if you were a Jew before conversion? How on earth can you fall into that way of thinking that you'll gain access to God, you'll be thought of better by God by your own human efforts? Rather strikingly, Paul talks here about the weak and worthless elementary principles of the world. This whole idea that it's what we do that counts with God. But as we've seen, to add any human effort to what Jesus has done for us is to diminish Jesus. It's to make him less, because it's saying what he did wasn't enough. We need to add to it. And the evidence Paul has against them is there in verse 10. You observe days and months and seasons and years. In other words, the Jewish calendar is what you follow. And it seems so trivial, doesn't it? Why shouldn't I sit down and have a family meal on a Friday night? Why shouldn't I respect my forebears' tradition by keeping the Day of Atonement with my granddad? Well, that's okay if you're Jews. There's maybe some reason we could justify in that. But why on earth are you going to adopt such things if you're a Gentile? They're not your culture. They're not your heritage. Don't go back to human effort. Don't go back to the law. We don't go back in ordinary life, do we? Who'd go back to using one of those when you've got one of those? Who'd go back to cooking like that when you've got one of those? Who'd go back to commuting in one of those when you've got one of those? It's just ridiculous, isn't it? We don't do it in everyday life. Why on earth should we do it with the gospel? Now again, if we look back to those days, that calendar, it doesn't seem very much, does it? It seems a very small thing. But as you'll know, very often those little things, our minor reactions to things, reveal the true state of our hearts. It's just like the tip of the iceberg. It shows us so much more going on underneath. Think back to the last family argument that you had. I imagine it was over something very trivial. Who put the wrong bit of recycling in the wrong box? Who didn't put the whatever it was back in the fridge or whatever, the toothpaste lid or whatever it was? It's something really silly, wasn't it? Because that's just what happens. But sometimes those little explosions reveal much greater problems underneath. We're not really cross about the jar going back in the wrong place. We're really cross about something else entirely. And Paul would suggest that's what's going on here. Just look at verse 11. I'm afraid I may have labored over you in vain. In other words, the work that Paul has done with these churches in Galatia may come to nothing. It may be empty because this is now how they're behaving. These things really do matter. Last week we were thinking about my friend who didn't want to buy a paper on a Sunday. We thought tonight already about giving things up for Lent. They seem so trivial, don't they? But they may well reveal a deeper spiritual problem in us. They may be saying to us, look, really, you're trying to win your own salvation. You're trying to pay God back in some sort of bizarre mortgage sort of arrangement. You're trying to get into God's good books because I really do think I deserve my heart's desire. Paul says no. Rejoice in the relationship you have with your Heavenly Father through Jesus by the power of the Spirit. And remember that you know him because he chose you. And you go on in that relationship by trusting in Jesus and what he has done, not what you are going to do. And that perseverance, that going on with Jesus, shows that you are the real deal, shows that Jesus has been at work in you. It's your relationship with God that counts. Don't jeopardize it. Don't turn back again to slavery. Secondly, verses 12 to 16, has Paul become your enemy by telling you the truth? It's your relationship with Paul that counts. Here we get a timely reminder of those to whom Paul is writing. Here are the churches, Antioch, Iconium, Lystra and Derbe, which Paul visited with Barnabas on his first missionary journey and which he then went back to in Acts chapter 18 just to see how they were getting on. And their relationship with Paul was absolutely vital in their coming to faith. End of verse 12, verse 13. You did me no wrong. You know it was because of bodily ailment that I preached the gospel first to you. Maybe he had to stay over because he was unwell. Rather than just passing through, he stayed on and spent time with them. And though my condition was a trial to you, you didn't scorn or despise me, but receive me as an angel of God, as Christ Jesus. In other words, his weakness, his suffering didn't put them off. Didn't make them think that this guy's got nothing to teach us, because after all, look, he's ill. They believed about Jesus from him. And if you look at verse 15, they made a great sort of offer towards him. I testify to you that if possible, you would have gouged out your eyes and given them to me. Maybe his symptoms were to do with his eyes. Maybe the ailment was to do with his eyes. Or maybe this is just an expression of how much they were willing to give up for him, the sacrifice they were willing to make for him. And you'll notice verse 15, What then has become of the blessing you felt? Through Paul's visit, they received blessing. The blessing of being right with God, the blessing of forgiveness, the blessing of the Spirit, the blessing of being able to call God Father. How on earth, having done that, having received all of that, can they now turn their back on Paul? Look at verse 16. Have I then become your enemy? Isn't that amazing? From being the one that they welcomed, they looked after, and they listened to and believed, now Paul is their enemy. No wonder Paul's perplexed, verse 20. His changed status in their eyes looks to have come about because his gospel said there was no place for human effort, no place for Old Testament law when it came to believing in God and trusting God or living as a member of the people of God. And he wants them, verse 12, to become like him. I entreat you, become as I am, because I also become as you are. I've given myself to you in preaching the gospel to you. Now you must become as I am. That is free from law, free from human effort. It is ironic, isn't it, that Paul, who was born a Jew of Jews, as he says elsewhere, trained as a Pharisee, should be the one arguing this. There's no place for law. There's no need for the law. And yet he's being opposed by some Gentile Christians who are saying, oh, maybe there is, maybe there is. And that's why, apparently, the relationship has broken down. Now, obviously, our relationship with Paul is different from theirs. But the call for us to become as Paul is exactly the same as to them. As we've noted before, Paul is given the job and the responsibility of being the apostle to the Gentiles. He is therefore our apostle. And his gospel of salvation by grace alone through faith is the only gospel. And so to abandon Paul is to abandon his gospel. And to abandon his gospel is to abandon Paul. Now, many today would want to attack Paul, and they do, for being a woman-hating, gay-hating bigot. They would say that Paul distorted the true, simple gospel of Palestine and turned it into something that Jesus, Peter, and all the others would not recognize. That's the sort of thing that is taught within our theological faculties at universities. And it is the starting point, the assumption made in many churches today. Paul begs you, and I beg you, do not follow them. Follow Paul. Become like Paul. Trust in his gospel, because that gospel brings you all the blessings you need and will transform you into Jesus likeness. Now, today, as we know, there is much talk of alternative facts and fake news. Now, of course, the father of lies has been active for many, many centuries, since the very beginning. And consequently, there have been alternative and fake no gospels ever since Jesus left this world. The key no gospel of today is the gospel of love and acceptance with no change. You're included, so we're told, on your own terms. And there is no call for repentance, no call for change of life. So listen very carefully when you go off to university. Listen to what is being taught. If you move away from Tunbridge Wells, listen carefully to what is being taught. As you choose a summer camp to attend, pay attention. If you're looking for an evangelistic course to take a friend to, choose wisely. Be discerning. Know and use the true gospel, Paul's gospel, as the standard by which you measure all other things. Because it's your relationship with Paul that counts. Has he become an enemy by telling you the truth? Third and last, verses 17 to 20. How can you fall for their lies? How can you fall for their lies? Because it's your relationship with Christ that matters. For the first time in the book, the false teachers come into view. They've been sort of shadowy background figures in the book so far. Verse 7 of chapter 1, not there is another gospel, but there are some who trouble you and want to distort the gospel of Christ. Verse 9, if anyone is preaching you to you a gospel contrary to the one that you received. 3:1, foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you? But we discover more about them here. We discover that they want to win you for their cause. They make much of you, but for no good purpose. It's always good to be made much of for a good purpose, and not only when I'm with you. They want to sign you up to their cause. They want you to think well of them. Their motivation, we come across in chapter 6. Just glance across to 6, 12 and 13. It's those who want to make a good showing in the flesh who would force you to be circumcised, and only in order that they may not be persecuted for the cross of Christ. For even those who are circumcised do not themselves keep the law, but they desire to have you circumcised, that they may boast in your flesh. In other words, what you do brings praise to them, so they think, and that's why they want it. Verse 17, back in chapter 4, gives us their method. They want to shut you out. Well, it may be shut you out from Paul. They want to drive a wedge between Paul and the church in Galatia. It may mean that what they're actually doing is shutting you out from the very thing you desire. You think you're going to do better with God by following their recipe, but in fact, it's going to end in disaster. They're a bit like the people traffickers who take all your money and say they're going to bring you to a new land with a great new life. And all that happens is they do take your money, but you just end up in slavery, in bondage to the people traffickers. And it's just miserable. Now, Paul says he would much rather do this face to face in verse 20. I wish I could be present with you now, because doing this by letter is difficult. He doesn't know how they're reacting. He can't see what's going on. But the key thing he's saying to them is that they must be discerning. Just because someone comes dressed in the way you expect them to come dressed, just because someone speaks in the sort of way that you expect them to speak, just because someone has the right sort of letters after their name, just because someone sounds sincere and spiritual, does not mean they are to be trusted. Just because the website you've been looking at and listening to talks about Jesus doesn't mean it's the true gospel. Be discerning. Jesus warned against sheep. No, he didn't. He warned against wolves in sheep's clothing, as Paul and Peter do as well. You see, wolves look like you expect sheep to look. They don't look like wolves. They don't sound like wolves, because they're trying to deceive you. And as they deny the true gospel, they feed on the sheep. They tear the flock apart. And they're messengers of Satan who will eventually lead you to eternal destruction. Contrast that with Paul and verse 19. This is what Paul gave his life to. This is what all true Christian ministers give their life to. My little children, for whom I am again in an anguish of childbirth until Christ is formed in you. Paul's joy is seeing these churches, because this is all plural here, these churches growing to be more like Jesus, bringing more people to be more like Jesus. That's what Paul's whole life and ministry is given to. That's the pain he endures, which he feels and suffers as an apostle. It's also his joy. That's what he wants to see. Christ being formed in you. Churches growing more like Jesus, becoming more confident in the gospel, trusting in what Jesus has done rather than what they're doing. So you see, it's never going to be about the teacher or the leader. It's never about his or her reputation. It's all about the well-being of the church. It's about growing up in Jesus. It's becoming more like him. So this is the sort of leader that we should all be aspiring to be. This is the sort of leader that we should be looking to follow and listen to. One who puts all the emphasis on Jesus. One who's concerned about Jesus' reputation rather than their own. Because your relationship with Jesus is all that matters, don't fall for their lies. Paul says, how ridiculous to turn back from all that Jesus has done for you to slavery. How ridiculous is that? The first verse of our final song says, with shield of faith and belt of truth, we'll stand against the devil's lies. That's what we're called to do. We're called to be discerning, such that our confidence and our hope, both in the present and in the future, is to be found in Jesus, whom the song describes as our risen conqueror.